Next week, we're going to start a new series just talking a little bit about the lost art of how to neighbor. And we live in a world and a time where we don't really understand how to do that anymore like maybe we used to or our parents did or our grandparents did. So I'm kind of excited about that. We're going to get that kicked off next Sunday. But this morning, we're going to finish up this little series we've been in over the last couple of weeks, Stuff Christians Do, as we've looked at things that people, church people do, churches do, activities like baptism. We talked about that the first week in this series, singing, why do we sing, offering, why do we take up an offering, all of these things that we do that, you know, on the outside looking in is weird, it's different, I don't understand that. This morning, we're going to finish this up as we look at the idea of why we talk about our faith. Why do we share our faith? Should we share our faith? Should we talk about our faith? You might go to a church or you might hang around people who think that they need to be doing a lot of door-to-door stuff. And so they kind of do that whole thing, you know, door-to-door and you know, sharing about their church or sharing about the Bible or, you know, just looking for opportunities to plant some seeds about faith. At the end of this morning's message, I'm going to have some tools for you and how you're going to be going door-to-door this week. No, I'm just kidding, just joking. Just want to make sure you're with me. You're still awake. We're not doing anything crazy like that. But the reality is there are times where we're going to, you know, have opportunities to share a little bit about our faith, and it's a little awkward. We don't really know what to do or how to do it or what to share, how to share it. We're afraid of, you know, a lot of different things that might happen. And so, you know, why do we do this thing and how do we do this thing? We're going to be working with or praying for our Costa Rica team. You see, there are times where churches will send small groups of people out on opportunities like that, a short-term missions trip. You know, why do we do things like that? Why do we spend money? Why do we take the time or the effort or energy to do that? Why at work, you know, why should I talk about faith? Why should I look for those opportunities? And so we're just going to dive into that a little bit this morning. And hopefully when we walk out of here, it's just a little less awkward, it's a little less scary, and maybe we have some ideas or some tools for when those opportunities present itself. But the reality is, for a lot of us, talking about our faith is not an easy thing to do. I just real quickly just thought of, you know, some reasons why we don't, you know, why we don't talk about faith, why we try to kind of stay away from those conversations, you know, at work or maybe around, you know, a table, you know, extended family, and you know, why we tend not to do those things. Just a couple of quick reasons for you this morning. We're afraid to talk about it. We're just afraid to do it. We're afraid they're going to ask us a hard question. We're afraid they're going to ask us about the dinosaurs. We're afraid they're going to ask us, you know, about, you know, use really fancy words, and we just don't know how to answer those questions. We're afraid they're going to, you know, maybe even want to be serious about church and God and faith, and I don't know what to do if they are. I'm not a pastor. I've never been trained how to, you know, give the right answers or to pray with somebody if they're actually really serious about this thing. And so sometimes we're just afraid. You know, we're afraid about that moment when they might find out we go to church. You know, everything's really cool at work. You know, the relationship we have with them is really cool. And then all of a sudden, you know, what we do on Sundays becomes a part of the conversation. And we kind of, you know, we don't, you know, we tend to go to this place and we kind of hang out with some people. And then they find out we go to church and it's like, oh, you're one of those people. And, you know, we're afraid, you know, how that's going to look and how they're going to react to that. We don't feel qualified. We just don't feel like, you know, that's our role. You know, so let's bring them to church, you know, we'll invite them, we're cool with that, let somebody else kind of do that, that's been trained to do that, that has, you know, a little bit more education than I do, and we don't want to be pushy. I think that's one of the reasons why maybe we don't maybe talk a little bit about these things very often. We just don't want to be pushy. We don't want to be that person. You know, we don't want to be that door-to-door person. We don't want to be that, you know, that's always bugging them about Jesus, always bugging them about God, always bugging them about the Bible. We just don't want to come across that way. There's probably a lot of reasons why we don't really get into this whole idea of sharing our faith, and it scares us a little bit, and we tend to, you know, maybe move away from those conversations when we kind of see it moving in that direction. I think what I really hope that you understand this morning as we just dive into this whole idea and you know, maybe help ourselves become a little less awkward in it. I hope you understand that our faith is meant to be personal. Our faith should be personal, but it's not meant to be private. Your faith, your decision to follow Jesus, what you believe, you might even have opinions. We might differ on some of those issues. That's okay. You should have some things that are very personal to you. You should have things that matter a lot to you. You should have things that, you know, I'm not going to stand for that. Like, that's an issue for me. I'm going to fight on that one. Like, I'm gonna parent that way. I'm gonna say no to that, or we're gonna say you should have those things that are personal to you, and they might just be that. They might be personal. They might not be what everyone else, you know, kind of holds to, and that's okay. But what we discover about this the story of faith is that it's not meant to be private. That it should be something that's very personal to us. It should be something that's very dear to us. It should be something that matters very deeply to us. It's ingrained into our very lives. It's ingrained into our very, you know, family, into the culture of who we are as people and our families. But it's not meant to necessarily be private. And if you think about it this way, every single one of you that's here this morning, every single one of you that might be listening today that has had an encounter with faith or made a decision, a deep decision about your faith, it's obviously important enough to you that you're willing to come a little bit early on a Sunday morning, and, you know, yeah, the coffee's good, and yeah, you really like singing, and so, you know, that's one of the reasons why you show up. We all know that. You know, there's a reason why you're here, and obviously there's something about this thing of faith. There's something about this idea of Jesus and about God that matters a little bit to you. You got to understand, and you got to think of it in this way. Every single one of us that has made some kind of decision about faith, probably a very, very high majority of us, maybe even 100%, I don't know, but there's very few of us that made that decision in a vacuum, all by ourselves, with no other person's involvement, with no kind of a relationship. You know, all right, maybe we heard a sermon that connected to us, maybe we went on a retreat, you know, that really impacted me, you know, like Grady's story, maybe we went to a camp, and there was something about that. But I'd be willing to make the bet that every single one of us in our story, there are examples, and there are pictures, and there are a part of our story are the relationships or the people in our life that helped lead us to that moment. And maybe that moment was in a church service. Maybe that moment was at a retreat. Maybe that moment was at a camp. But there were probably a lot of other people that were a part of that journey to where we got to a place in our life where we made a significant decision about faith. There were people who were willing to talk to us about it. You know, that's one of the things that we love about, you know, having these, you know, telling our stories through the videos. You hear common themes. You hear about parents who are willing to sit down with their kids and help them work through some of the deeper questions of faith that they had. Whether they had the right answers or not, it didn't matter. I mean, that's never comes up in the story that, yeah, you know, they answer all of my questions. It was just that they were there for them. You hear about people, you know, you hear about our volunteers in the back. You hear about the people that had, you know, that made relationships or were willing to invest time into their lives. You always hear everybody's story involves other people. There's always somebody who is willing to say, I have a personal faith, but I'm not going to allow this to be private where I live in a box and I never talk about it and I never make any effort to engage other people with this story. All of us that have made a significant decision of faith at some point in our life had somebody else who probably was walking with us through that. They talked to us about things. They were willing to engage us on some of those issues. They cared enough about us when they saw us going through a difficult season in our life that they came alongside of us, and maybe we weren't looking for all the answers, and they probably didn't have all the answers, but there was something about that relationship and something about those relationships that allowed us to move one more step forward in this journey of faith. All of us have that in our history. All of us have that in our story at some place. People who had personal faith but weren't allowing themselves to be private about it. Paul talks about the incredible opportunities that we have in our lives and in our journeys to tell a story about a God who's done some really incredible things for us to allow us to have the life that we have. If you have a Bible this morning, I want to work you through some of the words that Paul writes to a group of church people about this issue, about what God had done for them, which they had heard him talk about, and now he's just reinforcing, and what they can do with those stories, with those words, what they need to remember about their place in this world and the relationships that they have with others and what they see in them. If you have a Bible this morning, if you brought one with you, we're going to be working in the book of 2 Corinthians. So in the New Testament, towards the back third of your Bible, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Paul writes these two different letters to this church in Corinth that he had gotten started. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, Paul shares with them, and reminds them about what they have, what they had been given, what they had at their disposal, and how to start to think about themselves. This is really actually really interesting. Paul challenges them to rethink how they think about themselves and how they see themselves in a world. You got to remember, you got to understand, these were people, some of them would be considered slaves, not, you know, again, not the slaves that we know, indentured servants, you know, somebody that has a large debt to somebody else, and so they work for them to pay that debt off. Some of them were Roman citizens, some of them were not. Some of them were of a Jewish background, some of them were Gentiles. You have this kind of mix of people. And as the church has gotten going, as the message of Jesus has gotten going, they're starting to find themselves more on the fringes of their culture. They were persecuted. They were kind of pushed off to the outside of life, and people didn't always accept them because, again, there were some weird things. You know, they talk about communion, like as we, you know, we looked at a couple weeks ago, they talk about bodies, they talk about blood, and it's, you know, hard to understand some of that. It's hard to you know, get our minds wrapped around that when we don't follow this faith. And so this is a group of people that are kind of like us in a world, in a culture where, you know, what we believe, what we hold on to, our culture doesn't always believe the same we do. We're sometimes considered backwards. We're sometimes considered, you know, to be, you know, weird or different. And it's just, we're not always seen as people, you know, they don't always want to hear us. They don't always, you know, they don't always want to, because we have the segment of Christianity that is weird and loud, and they do things when they shouldn't do things, and they say things when they shouldn't say things, and so we all kind of get wrapped up into it. And Paul just says, guys, here's who you are. This is how God sees you. This is how you need to see yourself when it comes to this issue. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, if you have a Bible or if you want to follow along the screen this morning, starting in verse 14, Paul says to them, "For Christ's love compels us." Christ's love has propelled me, has obligated me because of what I've experienced in the love of Jesus. I am now obligated, Paul says. I'm now hemmed in. I am compelled now to do some things with my life because of what I have experienced through Jesus, that I didn't deserve it. I did nothing to earn it. That this love was given to me, a broken man, a messed up man, a flawed man, and he didn't have to give it to me, but he did. And now I am compelled because of that love, and because we are convinced. There was something about these guys that pushed them to do some of the things that they did, that pushed them to travel all across the known world at that time, to put themselves in positions where they could be thrown in jail, where they could be beaten, where they could even be killed for their faith. And Paul says, I just want you to know, this love that I have experienced has compelled me because I am convinced. Convinced of what? Convinced that one died for all, and therefore all died. And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again. These guys, Paul, were absolutely convinced that Jesus was who he said he was. That Jesus died, voluntarily died on a Roman cross, falsely accused, And then on the third day, his closest followers went to where they buried him, and they could not find that body in the tomb. And these first century followers of Jesus, Paul himself, were convinced that that tomb was empty, and that a few days later, that they were talking to the man that they saw killed on a cross, that a few days after that, that Peter had lunch with him on a beach, that they interacted with him for 40 days, that he appeared to hundreds of people, and that all of these first century followers of Jesus were convinced that the tomb was empty. Paul will say in another letter that the very faith that he held on to, that the very faith that you and I hold on to today, thousands of years later, hinges on one event, not on the teachings of Jesus, not on whether he talked about this issue or he didn't talk about this issue and he wasn't strong enough on it. That had nothing to do with their faith. That had nothing to do with the bedrock of their faith. That their faith, the conviction that they had, they were absolutely convinced that Jesus was alive after 3 days in a tomb. The tomb was empty. And Paul would later go on to say that the entire faith, the entire Christian faith hinges on that one issue. It doesn't matter about the dinosaurs. It doesn't matter about how old the earth is. We can get wrapped up in those. Those are important debates. You know, those are discussions over great over coffee. But the absolute 100% bedrock of the faith that Paul talks about is that the tomb was empty. That's what matters. If they go today and they go to Israel and they go into Jerusalem and they find a tomb and they've discovered that it's Jesus and they can figure out some way that this is the man that we've been talking about, then Paul says our entire faith, it's over, it's done. There's nothing there. We're bad people. We're to be made fun of. Everything that we've held on to is in vain. And they were convinced. Paul was convinced. That Paul says, the love of Christ has compelled me. I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm challenging you to do what you do because we know the tomb was empty. Everything we hold on to, everything we believe is all about this empty tomb. And these were people, Paul himself, who would be willing to go to jail, who would be willing to be beaten. Many of them were willing to die for this conviction. They were willing to die knowing that a tomb was empty. And then Paul says, verse 17, therefore, whenever you read your Bibles, if you read your Bibles and you read that word therefore, whenever you read it, you always ask yourself, what is it there for? Because of this conviction, because of what they had experienced, because of what they knew, because a tomb was empty. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come, the old has gone, the new is here. Therefore, because of Jesus, because of an empty tomb, because of what he has done for us, you can be a new person. You don't have to be stuck in the old ways anymore. You don't have to be in bondage to the old habits anymore, to the old ways anymore, to the old traps anymore. You don't have to be stuck in the old relationships. You don't have to live that way anymore. And because of Jesus, because of an empty tomb, there is a power that can change the hardest heart. There is a power that can change the greatest sinner. There is a power that can change any one of us, that we can be a new person. No, but see, you don't understand what I've done. You don't understand the things that I've done in my life. You don't understand the people that I've hurt. You don't understand the things that I've said. You don't understand how broken I am. Paul says, everything changes with an empty tomb. Everything is different because of an empty tomb. You can be a new person. The old is gone and the new is here. He continues, verse 18, all this is from God who reconciled us to himself through Christ. you think about that word reconcile. You think about what that word means. We understand that word. We might not use that word all the time, but we understand what that word is. We understand if there are relationships in our lives that need to be reconciled, if there's somebody who we have caused pain or they have caused us pain, in a relationship that has been broken, in a relationship where it's been severed, in order for it to be reconciled, somebody has to be willing to make the first move. Somebody has to be willing to take the first step. Somebody has to be willing to send that email or send that text or make that phone call or send that letter and say, hey, I'd like to try to figure this out. And isn't that the reason why so many times in our relationships they aren't reconciled? Because, you know, I'm not going to do it. They hurt me. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to make that effort. They need to do it. They're the ones that are supposed to do that to me. And so the relationship never, there's never an opportunity for any opportunity for reconciliation to happen because we're not willing to take the first step and they're not willing to take the first step. Paul says, no, in the story of God, he was willing to take the first step. In the story of God and what he did through Jesus, he was willing to make the first step. And you didn't even want it. We didn't even want it. We didn't think we needed it. And there are times in our life we still don't think we need it. But God was willing to take that first step. God was willing to move towards us. He was willing to initiate reconciliation to us. And then Paul says, and thou hast given us the ministry of reconciliation. And he explains that God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them, and he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. Paul says, here how this is how it's work, how it works now. This is what God has done for us. And now we are involved in this ministry. There's a nice church word for you. We are involved now in this work. We are now involved in this process, and we have a message, we have a story, and it's a story of reconciliation. It's a story of how God has made the first move in our lives, even when we didn't want it, and maybe even some of us, oh, I'm not interested in that. That's fine. You don't have to be. Doesn't matter. He still made the first move. He took the first step. And now that is our message. And you think about the words that Paul says. You think about the ramifications of what he says in this letter to these church people. And you think about the ramifications of their own personal life. You think about the messages that come out of the church today. Not just ours, just the church in general. You think about the things that come out of the lives of the people who call themselves followers of Jesus. We would have to be honest and we'd have to say that not every message that comes out of our mouths or comes out of our camps or comes out of our churches is a message of reconciliation. It's in fact the exact opposite of that message. It's a message of division. It's a message of hurt. It's a message of anger. It's so many other impulses. We have one message. We have one opportunity. We have one story. It's a story of how God wants to reconcile himself back to people and how he was willing to make the first move. He initiated it through Jesus. The empty tomb shows us that. The empty tomb shows us that this is real, that this can happen, that no matter where we're from, no matter what we've come from, no matter what we've done, because of an empty tomb, we can be reconciled. We can be fixed. We can be new. We can be different. We can be changed. And then he tells us what we are. Verse 20. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors. We are his representatives. You think about an ambassador. You think about a person who becomes an ambassador. You think about a person who's tasked by a government to be an ambassador. They're given authority. They're given authority to represent a culture. They're given authority to represent a belief system. They're given authority to represent the needs and the wants and the desires of a certain country or certain government. And they're tasked with the authority to go somewhere else and to another group of people and to live among them and to help them understand what they represent and who they represent. They're tasked with the opportunity to go before a group of people and to represent a system of beliefs and values, to represent a vision to them. And Paul says, this is who we are. We are his ambassadors in a broken world. We are tasked with authority to represent a system of beliefs, to represent values, to represent a message and a story of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. See, Paul says to this group of church people, this group of messed up people, this group of misfits and outcasts, this group of people that lived on the fringes of society, God isn't showing up at the door. God's not showing up at your neighbor's door. God's not showing up at your neighbor's cubicle. God's not plopping himself in your neighbor's chariot. You know, when your neighbor's life gets messed up, when your friend's life gets messed up, when your kid's life gets messed up, God's not showing up. You are showing up. This is how God has chosen to do this in this world, Paul says. God's not coming here to do, that was Jesus. Jesus was here. Jesus lived and he had that ministry and we have the story of the cross and we have the story of the empty tomb. God's not coming. He's making his appeal through us. So a couple things I want you to think about this morning. As we think about the opportunities that sometimes come before us to talk about faith or talk about the Bible or talk about church, talk about God, and it's a little awkward and it's hard and I'm afraid and I don't feel qualified and I don't want to be pushy, just a couple things to think about this morning. First of all, God has a story. And that's what Paul says in fancy words, you know, writing, you know, to a group of church people, writing to us, that God has a story. It's as simple as that. It's not a debate. It's not a lecture. You don't have to give a sermon. You don't have to know a bunch of points. You don't have to know a bunch of verses. It's just God has a story. Our world is broken. We're broken. And God made a way for us to not be broken anymore. God made a way for us that we could experience something at a depth of love, a depth of significance, a depth of worth that you cannot find anywhere else in this world. And every person we talk to understands that journey because we're all on it trying to figure this thing out. And God has a story. I've shared with you before. You know, I have guys that I listen to. I have pastors that I let speak into my life. I read their stuff. I listen to their podcasts, their messages, you know, read their stuff. Because I need that in my own life, and I need people to feed me. I need people to, you know, invest in me even from a distance. And one of those guys that I've just grown to love through the last few years in just my own personal journey, Andy Stanley Down, pastor in Atlanta, Georgia. And Andy, when he talks to his church about how do you know when somebody might be open to talk a little bit about God? Like, what are the cues? How do you know that somebody might be open to talking about things of faith? He talks about the not cues. And I love these. They're so cool. He talks about the not cues. Things not going well, not prepared for, not from around here. When you hear people talk in life and they start talking about how things are not going well in their life, not that we want to shove God down their throat, but sometimes that's a cue that maybe they're open to another story. Maybe they're open to the story of how God can work when things are not going well.
When you hear people start talking about they're not prepared for, they weren't prepared for that report, they weren't prepared for that visit from the doctor, they weren't prepared for that loss, they weren't prepared for whatever. When you start hearing people talking about those things and talking in those ways in your life, sometimes those are cues where they might be open to the story of God. Somebody says, I'm not from around here. You know, you hear people who move to this area, you hear people who move into the area where you're at or where you work. Sometimes they're open. Talk about church. You know, talk about, you know, hey, you know, church, and we go to this place and free coffee, and, you know, it doesn't last too long, usually about an hour, and every once in a while the guy hits a single and music's usually pretty good. And, you know, somebody says things like, you know, I'm not from around here. So, sometimes, and I just love that. Those are great just things to think about. Not that we always have to be talking about God, not that we're going to, you know, turn into Bible answer man or Bible answer woman, but there are times when people are talking about what's going on in their life, and sometimes those are cues to talk a little bit about the story of God. Here's something else you need to remember. You have a story. God has a story, and you have a story. Every one of us has a story. Some of our story is pain. Some of our story is mistakes. Some of our story is victory. Some of our story is growth. Some of our story is, I'm not there yet, but I'm trying. All of us have a story. You have a story. Here's what you need to understand about God's story and your story. When it comes to this idea of talking about faith, when it comes to this idea of those opportunities that sometimes present themselves, just learn to tell them well. You have a story, and God has a story. Learn to tell them well. You don't have to have all the right words. You don't have to know all the voices, all the verses. You don't have to have all of the answers. But most days that when, you know, as we live and breathe and work on this planet, in this world, we're going to have some opportunities to tell a little bit about our story. We're going to have some opportunities to tell a little bit about God's story. And it doesn't have to be the whole story. We might not even know the whole story. You might not know all the you know, main characters of the story. You might not know all the ins and outs of the story. You might not know all the Old Testament. You might not know why the Old Testament says that. It doesn't matter. That's not, I don't think, what God is looking for from us. It's just simply being able to tell a little bit of the story of God. We're broken. We're messed up. We're flawed. We're imperfect. But there's a message of reconciliation. There's a message of how God was willing to take the first step with us. It's a message of an empty tomb, which means that things that are dead can come back to life. Those parts of our life that we thought were dead, those parts of our life we thought were diseased, those parts of our life that we thought were too broken, that those things can come back to life, that God is in the business of making dead things come back to life, that there's a story that we have, that you have. And it's not a sermon that people are looking for, and it's not all the answers to all of their questions. It's just a story. It's just somebody who's willing to talk a little bit about what God has done in their own story. See, that's the thing about telling your story. You can argue about God. You can argue about the Bible. You can argue about, is that real? Is it not? They can't argue with what he's done in you. They can't argue with your experience. They can't argue with how God has changed you, how God has helped you move from where you were here to where you are now today. They can't argue with that. And sometimes your story has some of the most power behind it as we tell the story of God. Maybe a little less awkward, maybe a little less nervous, maybe a little less fearful when we understand it's not a sermon, it's a story. And God has one, and you have one. We just need to learn how to tell it well.